Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I understand that today you would like to talk about our favorite restaurant finds
You and I have had the good fortune over the last 5 or 6 months to do a little more traveling than we have over the last few years and go to a lot of really, really good and a lot of really interesting restaurants. And while, you know, I don't by any means say that this is a comprehensive list of restaurants in the country or in the world, just some of our favorites over the course of this last year, I thought that it might be fun to share our favorite places of the last year. So I put together a list of my favorite three restaurants or favorite three meals, I should say, over the last 6 months.
Okay.
The top one, well, let's start with number three. There was a place in Bologna, Italy, in a lovely little square, tucked away restaurant called Posta, where I had some of the great pasta of my life, and that was a really memorable. You and I, we stopped there.
On the way to Rada and Chianti.
On the way to Rada and Chianti.
From Verona.
We took an afternoon.
I got to tell you about this afternoon, though. We were with my girlfriend, Christy, who's my wonderful and lovely girlfriend, Christy, who said, this is where we have to go. We're going by Bologna. We have to stop at then get.
We got to eat in Emilia Romana.
You got to eat in Bologna. It wasn't that far out of our way.
Probably the most famous food city in all of Italy. You got to go.
And so we're headed there, and we sort of realize this as we're underway, and we sort of have a map, we don't have a good map that can get us to Bologna, so we stop at a roadside stand, we pick up a map, we call the restaurant, we make a reservation. They're serving lunch, I think, till 2. According to our calculations, we can get there at 1:58. They were counting on a better driver than we were, although we had a great driver. Christy's better driver than either one of us in Italy. So we get there at 2, and she drops us.
What we learned is the Italians drive really, really fast.
And the other thing, the Italians, you may have heard the Italians are late sometimes. They don't really show up on time. The one thing the Italians always do on time, close. they got that right. The Germans, everything on time. The Italians, close on time.
I have to say, something happened to this restaurant that has never happened to me any place else in the world.
What's that?
I pulled on a door, looked in the window, saw a full restaurant, and the door was locked.
Yeah, exactly.
Never happened to me. The restaurant's completely full, but the front door is locked.
Yeah, because at 2 o'clock, they lock that door.
Exactly.
You know?
So there's Francis and me going,
please, please, we're Americans and we're hungry. So they let us in, and they were very nice, and they sat us down and got us lunch, and it was phenomenal. So La Posta, I agree with you.
So that's probably my number three restaurant over the last 6 months. A great dining experience, fun. They really were very, very nice to us after they unlocked the door.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is a recent dining experience, my number two. Francis and I just came back from Chicago, and there was a restaurant there, now a super, super loud restaurant, but a place called The Publican. You sit at long tables, and, everybody's, bench-style seating, but the food was wonderful, and I could see if I were there, we were there on a Friday night, I could see being there, it being my kind of place on a Monday or Tuesday. Just the food was so extraordinary. I mean, think of how many times in my life I've had pork belly, and for me to say this is the best pork belly I've ever had in my life. There were some country ribs that they did were extraordinary. They did a lake perch, a Lake Erie perch from obviously local for them,
Lake Erie.
Lake Erie. That was extraordinary. A halibut dish that you never would have known had come from 1,000 miles away.
Yeah,
but it was blow away.
And The Publican had great beers, and the service was good, and communal seating in a big space.
It was just a fun place, and the food shocked me. And it's really hard to to outdo my expectations with food, which takes me to my favorite dining experience over the last 6 months, and one of my favorite dining experiences of my life. Another place that really surprised me with how good it was Agriturismo we went to in Rada in Chianti called La Petraia.
Yeah,
we did a show from there,
yep.
which went up just about a month or two ago. The La Petraia was easily the most outstanding and most memorable meal of my last 6 months.
Can I tell you something? I think that's one of the best shows we've done as well, mm-hmm. from La Petraia. The two shows that are kind of like that are the show we did from La Petraia I loved because we went and we got to spend some time there, and the other show is the show that we did when I was on site at Shin Vineyards out in Long Island. There's a similar sensibility to those shows. And but what they're doing there is amazing, and the food, I agree with you, was tremendous.
I was shocked. Yeah. You know, I thought it was a really cool place where I was going to get a pretty good meal.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be the best meal that I was going to have this year.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I that's not what I was thinking of when I went to the place.
And I want to put in a vote for the best new cocktail bar, it's not a new cocktail bar, but it's new to us that we discovered. I'd heard great things about it. I'd read great things about it. But in Chicago this year, we went out together. We did a little public speaking gig in Indianapolis, Indiana. And since we were in striking distance to Chicago, we went to dinner in Chicago, and we stopped in at the Violet Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And a big shout out to anybody from Violet Hour if you're listening.
That was my favorite, and you know, I was making some lists last night when I was getting ready to do the show, and I listed Violet Hour as my favorite cocktail bar not in New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know, that was just such a cool place. The cocktails were really, really good. The people were very nice. It was a very comfortable space to be in.
Yeah.
It wasn't overdone. It wasn't pretend. It was just really, really outstanding.
And one other place that we happened on by mistake. We were driving with friends from Indianapolis to Chicago, and they said, we have to stop for lunch on the farm. I said, okay, lunch on the farm, whatever farm that is, sounds good to me. And we went to the Trader's Point Creamery,
mm-hmm.
where they have a restaurant on the Trader's
Point. Called the Loft, yeah.
Called the Loft. It was terrific, and I didn't realize that I love the Trader's Point Creamery. We don't buy it for the restaurant, but they sell to Wegmans, which mm-hmm. has stores here in New Jersey, and they have a yogurt in a glass bottle. They have a flavored yogurt that I don't really care for just because I don't like flavored yogurt, but they have a really good cow's milk, whole milk yogurt that comes in a glass bottle. It's pourable. It's in my refrigerator all the time. It's phenomenal.
I made a list of three restaurants that I wish were closer.
Mm-hmm.
And Trader's Point was actually made my list for restaurants that I wish were closer. They get bonus points, of course, because they use the Pastureland butter that we use
for that
co-op from Minnesota.
Right.
The place was interesting. It's right on a dairy farm.
It's inexpensive.
It's inexpensive.
And they have a dairy bar.
And it features, you know, and it features what they have. It features all this great dairy that comes from their place.
Yeah.
So that was a really cool place that I thought was really doing a cool thing. And the food was pretty good. So that's a place that I wish I were closer to. There was another place that Francis and I have been to in outside of Verona, Italy, a couple of times called Ristorante Al Ponte.
Trattoria Al Ponte,
I'm sorry, in Somma Al Campagna.
Somma Campagna.
Somma Campagna, about 10-15 minutes outside of Verona.
Yeah.
And it's a place that you've heard us talk about before if you're an avid listener. Just a lovely place. It literally is a house. And it's got a little dining room down in the back of the house, and just a wonderful place to have a great meal with friends, and it's not going to be too fussy, and it's just a place I wish were closer.
All right, so, go ahead.
And then my final place is the place I just mentioned in my top meals was a place called The Publican. That is a place I could see myself eating at once a week if it were closer to me.
All right, so you can find Mark's picks on our website at restaurantguysradio.com. If you live near any of these places or you're traveling near to them, they're worth taking a hit. Taking a trip and not taking a hit. What's that? That's all wrong, isn't it? All wrong. Anyway, so you can find those at restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment with Dusan Zarek from Employees Only and the Macau Trading Company to talk about his new book and the bar world in general. Stick with us. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. And our guest today, joining us once again, becoming a Restaurant Guys regular, is Dušan Zarek. Dušan owns Employees Only in the Macau Trading Company in Manhattan, two of New York's finest cocktail bars. And his latest book with his partner Jason Kosmas is Speakeasy.
Dušan, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good to be there. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. It's always interesting. Whenever you come on the show, you're one of those guests who sort of takes over. You know, it's like it's like we have a lot to talk about. And now you have a first thing I want to talk about is your new book. Why a new cocktail book? What is Speakeasy? Now, Speakeasy has recipes and some stories as well. What does Speakeasy bring to the world that wasn't here before it was written?
Great question. I think that's a really great question. You know, I was thinking for a very long time, why the hell don't working bartenders have cocktail books out there? It is actually them who make these cocktails, and they should know best, you know, how they're implemented and put in practice and executed properly. So if you look around into the cocktail book libraries, what you will see is a lot of travel writers, a lot of historians, a lot of enthusiasts writing cocktail books, but not actually working bartenders. It's just like having, you know, a journalist writing you a cookbook, which, you know, it might be a nice thing and might be interested, but, you know, that person probably didn't spend years and years behind the line cooking, you know, and knows how to execute these dishes in the proper way. And, you know, so we felt that, you know, that's a huge advantage for people to actually have a cocktail book written by really professional working bartenders, which, if you like something in the book, gives you an opportunity to actually come and see us behind the bar and get a direct transmission if you have any questions regarding the recipes or anything else. So, you know, that's what makes us different. That's like the first point that we really wanted to point out. And then the second thing that we wanted to point out is that we found ourselves when writing on this book that there was no vocabulary established in the cocktail world which will define kind of tasting notes.
Mm-hmm.
So we inserted a key. So every cocktail gets you a key, which gives you what the dominant flavor is, what is the accentuating flavor, what's the body of the cocktail, what's the texture, what's the finish like, what's the dryness, you know, so that if you're not familiar, for example, what a Campari is, you know, you can read at the, you can read the tasting notes and kind of get a mental picture of, you know, where that cocktail is going to go.
You know,
and that wasn't available before.
Dušan, on your first point, we've all gotten cocktail books and then tried to make a recipe out of the cocktail book, and it simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't tested every day by a bartender behind a bar.
Exactly. 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 And that was the point. You know, we proved these recipes many, many, many times, and, you know, these are the recipes that we stand behind 100%. And the response on the recipes has been excellent, actually. I was very humbled.
It's funny. I just, to be honest with you, Dušan, I just got to the book last night.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've been friends for a long time. I've drunk at your bar many times. We've been peers and colleagues for a long time. But I just got to this book last night, and I saw the tasting notes really is an innovation, and we're actually in the middle of a rewrite of our cocktail menu at Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, the cocktail bar Catherine Lombardi. And we're going to launch our new cocktail menu tomorrow, probably. And, you know, I looked at this key of giving people what things taste like, and I'm trying to think about how to incorporate that into my menu, just to give the customers an idea of what it is that they're ordering.
Well, that's a great, you know, that's definitely, I think, thinking in the right direction. You know, primarily, I think the servers and the bartenders should be, you know, very well versed in these tasting notes that they can eloquently explain what is it that is coming their way. But you know, it's a great idea, I think, because it enables the guest to make a better choice.
Now, yeah. Just to give a little background for those of you who haven't heard former shows with Dušan or don't know much about the cocktail world, Employees Only, it is the largest grossing cocktail bar per square foot in America, something like that. What's the statistic on that, Dušan?
Well, we serve over 138,000 shaken or stirred cocktails a year. That doesn't account for, you know, spirits on the rocks, highballs, wine, beer, or anything else. That just accounts for drinks that we put through the shaker a year. So this is an enormous amount of volume for a 1,600 square foot place.
Now that's the key. It's a 1,600 square foot place with two bartenders, a bar apprentice, and a barback, right?
No, just two bartenders and an apprentice, which we call barback.
Okay, so so that's two bartenders a night, seven nights a week, and makes all those drinks.
Yes.
That's an insane. For those of you who aren't in the business and can't really visualize,
it's a lot of drinks.
Holy cow, that's a lot of drinks.
It is.
So when Dushan talks about, you know, bartenders behind a bar and having credibility, you know, that's what we're talking about. You know, you said to me something that I thought, and this will be more interesting for those in the business, and I don't think it should take away from the romance for those who are not in the business, because, you know, a bar is a business. But when you have a busy bar, and by the way, especially if you're a patron who's waiting for a drink while the bartender's flirting with some girls on the other side of the bar, you'll feel the truth of this statement.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something at a recent conference we were at together. You said a bartender should be taking an order, making a drink, or exchanging money. Those three things, nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. But in the middle of this whole thing, you have to also be aware of the distributions of energies and possibilities,
mm-hmm.
so that you kind of are conscious about if someone is waiting for a little bit longer than necessary and how do you deal with the situation. Because it's all about, you know, our job is really about, you know, filling the register and filling the tip bucket. It's not about us as personalities. It's about us, you know, as professionals.
What I think that we get to do both things at the same time. I mean, I think that you create a sense of community while you're telling a story. You can be flirting with the girls at the end of the bar if you like, as long as you're making my drink while you're doing it.
Exactly.
It's that multitasking, and it's one of the hardest things to teach a bartender,
yes.
that you can be flirting while you're making a drink. You can be flirting while you're taking an order. That
exactly.
You can be, you know, telling a story while that's happening.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that's really hard. I mean, I always say I can teach a bartender, you know, to pretty much learn all the drinks in like a year. And that's if they're not really talented, then it's going to take a year. But for me to teach them what not to do, it's going to take me 5 years. And, you know, I have to lead by example, because they cannot really, like, you cannot teach these things by just giving them a manual. You know, they have to put it in practice, they have to see somebody performing it, and they have to learn from somebody who has already, you know, made that trip. You know, it's a very kind of it's a very spiritual thing, actually, you know.
Francis and I were in a bar in Chicago just a few weeks ago.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
And what I'll tell you is, these guys were some of the most technically sound bartenders that I have ever seen in my life. They made some of the best drinks I've ever had in my life.
The drinks were amazing.
Their bar had zero energy. There was nothing happening in their bar except for really good drinks happening. And all I could think about was, why do I care that you're even standing behind the bar? Let these drinks come from some place behind a curtain and bring them to me. There's no reason to have a bartender. You're just a guy who mixes drinks. You're not a bartender.
And I think that's we're seeing that some now in these young bartenders who are excellent drink craftsmen. But I really think that's not even half of what being a bartender is.
I think it's the first step to becoming a bartender, is learning your drinks and mastering your drinks. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, the first thing that you should really master is your knowledge and craft of making drinks.
Yes.
Okay. And once that is done, then, you know, then you rightfully point out to that question, what then? Because, you know, if this was all that makes a bartender, then a machine would be much better in making drinks than a bartender is, you know?
I agree.
And nobody will admit that, you know?
What?
So there is something else to it, and that something else has to be consciously built and with great love and great affection, you know, and great understanding, you know? It's a process that takes a long time. So these young kids, they're on the right path, but it's going to take a long time, you know?
Yeah, I think I agree with you, but what I find is interesting as some bars are coming up now, I am encountering at a bar, you know, I used to go to a bar and always find something in my favorite bar. There was something that I liked about the bar, whether it was a neighborhood bar that was a locus of community, or it was a bar where you'd go to try and find someone to meet with and hook up with, or it was near a venue or had some other energy to it. And they didn't always make great drinks. And now some of those bars make really great drinks, and the best bars have both.
Yeah.
And while I think each individual bartender may not have the ability to create the environment behind the bar,
mm-hmm.
When you go behind a bar and there's no bartender back there that sort of creates that sense of, like, hail fellow, well met, and you belong here,
mm-hmm.
it's just like it may as well be a machine.
It might be, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point, you know. Why would you stay for another drink? You know, like, what is your interest as a guest to stay there? I mean, if you really are interested in the high quality of cocktails, then I would understand. But, you know, there must be something else there. There must be an amount of possibilities beyond just, you know, the cocktail or the food. It has to be something that is extraordinary, that is different from your everyday, you know, life. And really great bartenders like Dale DeGroff know exactly how to bring this across, you know. And that brings me to the really important point, you know, really grown up and developed bartenders are very humble people because it's not about them, you
yep.
know.
Yep.
It's not about them. When they perform behind the bar, they're the humblest people ever. You could never, ever know that this man is responsible for the resurrection of the cocktail, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Talking about Dale specifically, yes.
Yeah.
Now, we'll talk about this more in a second, but, Dushan, you started a bar academy or a bar school called
yes.
Bar Academia,
yes.
And we'll talk about that more in a second, but I guess the question that all of this leads to is, can a bartender be taught to be a bartender, or is that, do you have to have some innate personality traits in order to be a great bartender?
You know, every person is different. We all are born with different kinds of gifts, you know. Some of us are more charismatic, some of us are more, you know, shy in a way, some of us are more direct, some of us are more hidden. And these, you know, the job of a good mentor is to kind of identify these gifts with each person that he's teaching and try to make that person rediscover those gifts and work on them, because this is what will make the center of gravity of their personality behind the bar, you know? Not every bartender is a great flirt, but they can be a great storyteller, they can be a great listener, they can be, you know, a great sage in a way that they can give always a good advice. So, you know, these things are really important. So the job of a good mentor is to actually be open to recognize the individual gifts that his apprentices have and then, you know, encourage those.
You know, you used a great phrase there, and I use this with our bartenders all the time, because one of the ways that we work out here in New Brunswick is people usually step behind our bar from our restaurant floor, and making the transition from great server or captain to bartender, you know, that takes a year at least to sort of make that happen. But one of the things that's very interesting is to explain to people that the bartender occupies a different place than the waiter in the scheme of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bartender is the center of gravity of a room and must be the center of gravity of a room. That doesn't mean he has to be overbearing.
Of course.
But the bartender, don't you find that the relationship with the bartender is very different than the relationship with the waiter,
yeah.
captain, sommelier?
Bartender's always on stage.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, we say the bartender has the goodies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you approach the bar, I mean, the word bar comes from, you know, from barrier. Yeah, from the word barrier, and that meant to prevent the guests to get to all the booze, right? That's why you had the barrier, and you know that's where the word bar comes from. And the bartender is somebody who mans the barrier. And psychologically, you know, when a guest approaches the bar, he comes to very similar. I mean, it's a vulgar parallel, but you know, very similar to a drug dealer. You know, you're willing to wait for your drug dealer in a way, you know.
Right.
You know, he can be late because he has the goodies. You know, when you sit on the table, it's like sitting in your own fortress.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's in some way, psychologically speaking, it's impenetrable. You know, it's like you're not inviting other people to join your fortress. It's only the server that comes in and he dances the way you say.
Uh-huh.
You know, whereas at the bar, you have that other kind of dynamic going on where the bartender can do something more for you easily.
Right.
You know, and that's why we say, you know, the bartender has the goodies, and you know, this is a privilege that should not be mishandled by any means. Actually, that privilege should be carefully. Cultivated, you know.
I agree. And you know what? We're going to talk more in just a moment with Dušan Zarek about his book Speakeasy, which we haven't spoken enough about yet, and his new bar school called Bar Academia in just a moment. When we return with the Restaurant Guys, you're listening to the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, and our guest today is Dušan Zarek. He owns Employees Only in the Macau Trading Company in New York City. He's an old friend and a frequent guest on the show. Your book we haven't spoken enough about. It's called Speakeasy, and in the foreword you talk about prohibition and prohibition's effect on the cocktail and drinking culture in America. Why did you decide to call it Speakeasy, and what does prohibition have to do with this book?
Well, actually, what we wanted to do is to somehow get the employees-only philosophy of cocktail making out there. And, you know, in negotiations with publishers, they wanted to capitalize on the latest trend of the, you know, fake speakeasies and, you know, the whole classic cocktail movement coming back in a big style. So we compromised on calling the book Classic Cocktails Reimagined by New York's employees-only bar. And in that concept, we could then present classics that we got inspired by and our takes on the classics and then our custom creations that were inspired by those classics. And so the book is basically, a guide of how a classic cocktail should be evolving. Because if you look at the classic drinks and you go back in time, you know, They didn't just become classics by themselves. Somebody had to break some conventions in order to experiment with other ingredients, with different styles and techniques to kind of come up with a drink that then in time became a classic. And this is exactly what we want to do. We want to give people the tools to understand how to make your own creation so that they stand the test of time and become classics one day themselves. You know, and prohibition was definitely a really good medium for that because, you know, the availability of ingredients was severely reduced and bartenders had to play a lot in order to make these cocktails potable because, you know, the quality of ingredients was terrible.
Moonshine doesn't always taste so good.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know,
you touch on an interesting topic and you mentioned it in the foreword of the book as well. You talked about the fake speakeasy,
mm-hmm.
and there is an aesthetic, you know, with the cocktail bar behind the hidden door.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a certain utility to that, and that's certainly a lot of fun. I think that maybe we've gone a little over the top with it, and you talk about in the first picture of Employees Only, your partner has kind of a retro mustache.
Yeah.
Which sort of fit in with the aesthetic 10 years ago of what was going on.
Yeah.
And you talk about how when you started to see those retro handlebar mustaches start to pop up on the other side of the bar, it became disturbing somehow.
It became scary, you know. Then we knew that we actually did something. I mean, we were actually really the first, you know, after Milk and Honey, you know, that was a really, you know, tiny place and really extremely high quality we were the first publicly kind of open speakeasy where everybody could come in. You know, you just had to know to pass through the fake psychic front.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, to come in, and we were open to everybody. You know, the idea of employees only comes from restaurant employees only. So, you know, our target audience was and is still and will always be fellow workers in the industry, you know, our dear friends from other places. And, you know, we opened it up with an open heart and an open mind to, you know, to bring people back in time and to show them what real American bartending was, and, you know, a real American saloon as well, because, see, this is a big part of our culture.
Yeah.
It's a big part of our culture. You know, the saloon, the bar in America is a completely different thing than a saloon and a bar in Europe. You know, it
was, talk to me about how.
Well, you know, we use bars and saloons to meet each other.
Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, in New York. Especially in cities.
Especially in cities. You know, you go in there, and then the culture of being at the bar is very, like, and I'm speaking about a time that I witnessed myself before the BlackBerry, before the iPhone, before the cell phone, you know, before all these things. When you would come into a bar and you could, through the interaction with the bartender and other guests, feel welcome and, you know, maybe meet somebody, you know, meet somebody that you could, you know, have a nice evening with or talk with or hear something interesting. So, you know, I'm talking about that kind of culture that is very different in Europe, you know, and you see this with European tourists. When they come in, they just huddle together, they don't talk to anybody, you know, they just have their drinks, they experience the atmosphere, but they don't really engage like Americans do, you know, because a bar is a social thing, it's a microcosm of our life, you know, and we don't have really time. So it's bars are a nice medium for people to be social, you know.
The one European exception would be the Irish, because in the Irish bar, it is completely where you would go and talk to anybody. Have you found, though, since, you know, we were all bartending, Mark and you and I were all bartending before people even had pagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen a change in the way that bar customers are they less likely to talk to strangers because they're looking at their BlackBerry and their
iPhone? That's
exactly
the question I was going to ask.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes. Clearly, you know, clearly if you have a single woman, solo woman sitting at the bar, you know, like 10 years ago, she would be probably just talking to the bartender or just looking at her hands, I don't know. And then somebody would approach and then, you know, probably there would be a conversation starting. But today, you know, she might choose to pull out her whatever smartphone and start doing some work or texting or Facebooking or Twittering or whatever they're doing. And it's you know, I understand bars that have a no cell phone policy because it's,
yep,
it is a little bit, you know, restricting to the energy of the bar. You want to be like the bartender should be in charge of distributing energies, you know, and if the people want to lock themselves up, then, you know, it's bad for our business.
Don't come to the bar. Yeah.
Right. And and remember, if you start talking to somebody who's texting somebody else, you're interrupting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When you take out that, when you walk in and hear, you know, we're it's childish in a way, and as more and more young people who've grown up with this come up in
mm-hmm.
a bar,
mm-hmm.
You used to walk into a bar, and if it was a good bar, it had no TVs or one TV, right?
Yeah.
Now you walk into a bar, and I hate walking into a bar where there are 9 televisions on. Because
yeah.
if you're the first or second or third person in the bar, what usually would happen, if there are 3 people sitting at the bar, you're having a drink, you would talk to each other. You have no choice. What else would you do? You're having a drink. Somebody walks in, they're the only yeah. other person at the bar.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're hitting on them. It doesn't mean you want to go home with them. It just means you're being social.
Exactly.
Well, if 3 different games are on, you don't even have to be watching the same game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, personal communication devices take it further, because when you're a single person sitting at a bar, okay, you feel stupid for a moment. You're supposed to, and the bartender's supposed to ease that. And then when someone else comes in, you say, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? Et cetera, and so forth. But now I see it all the time. The first guy into the bar pulls out his BlackBerry and starts doing some work. Somebody else comes, sits 3 seats down from him. They have that moment of uncomfortableness, too. They pull out their BlackBerry and start doing some work.
And those two people never meet.
I'm like, why did you come here?
Yeah.
You know? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's I totally agree. I mean, we're so overstimulated in this day and age with everything, you know, TV for sure, and advertisements and all these smartphones, and you know, it's just a stimulation that, so that people are very uncomfortable to be alone with themselves. They have forgotten what it means to be alone with myself. And to be okay with that, you know?
Yep.
And so most people, unfortunately, don't have that experience and are, you know, once they're left in that moment, as you define, a moment of uncomfortableness, is when they face themselves. And because they can't, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, they don't know what to do with themselves, then they go back to the usual habit, which is either texting, you know, working, looking at the screen, you know, just getting overstimulated over and over again. And it's a tragic thing. I mean, I teach the bartenders about that. It's a big part of our psychological training, because we cannot judge them for that. We can only try to create circumstances so that they might open up. And, you know, that happens after a while. After the second drink, they're much more open, you know, and then you can find an opening and get in there and help them to actually really have an experience.
Yeah, I find by the 10th drink, absolutely, that you can say whatever you want, and you can get in there as much as you need.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because I know that you teach a lot of classes and lecture a lot in the cocktail circuit, and Mark and I have been teaching wine classes and cocktail classes for almost 15 years now. And what I always say to people come at the end of a discussion, people respond pretty well to our talks. And say, you know, you're actually an excellent lecturer. I'm like, yeah, listen, I just gave you 3 glasses of wine during my lecture. If your art history teacher in college was able to give you 3 glasses of wine, you'd have thought she was a good lecturer, too.
I would have never blown that class off, I'll tell you.
Yeah, there is a reason why we give out samples during our presentation.
Exactly. You know, the ultimate is an Irish slagging insult, which says, you know, I'm funny. It's a self-deprecating. It says, you know, I'm much funnier the more you drink. You know what I mean? That's how,
right.
That's how it works.
All right.
We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I want to talk about your new bar class that you're offering to the public called Bar Academia. We'll be back in just a moment with Dusan Zarek of Employees Only and the Macau Trading Company in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. Dusan Zarek is our guest. We were talking about his book and his bars. And now I want to talk about something that was one of the main reasons we brought you on the show, is your Bar Academia. Did I say that right? Bar Academia?
Well, you can say Bar Academia.
Academia.
You know? I'm a foreigner, so, you know, I'm afraid I have to take your lead on this.
Academia. Don't take his lead. Take anybody else's.
Sometimes you get a mental block on something. So, English is my first language. Tell us about this exciting bar program. And I want to preface this by saying, if you're going to go to the local bartender school and you think that's going to help you in some way, it's not. Okay, there are more useless bar classes out there that are offered for, and as irrelevant as they were 20 years ago when we weren't making classic cocktails and using our own ingredients and squeezing juice fresh, and as irrelevant as they were back then, now they're completely irrelevant to making quality cocktails. So there are some good classes out there, and you can find some at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Bar Smarts is one. And Dusan, you sound like you have a pretty interesting academy here. How's that work?
Well, you know, I've been pressed by people for a very long time to, you know, begin formally teaching the philosophy and cocktail making of Employees Only. And, you know, finally I gave in. You know, I looked at my calendars and, you know, I made some room and sat down and thought about, you know, what would really be the right way to go about this. And so I designed a course that is a 3-tier course. It begins with, you know, a beginner or level 1 course, which we call the Cocktail Hour. And then it goes into the main course, which is the intermediate course, and then the nightcap, which is the advanced course.
Who would take the beginner course?
I am interested in, you know, young professionals who really want to be professional bartenders. You know, really people who want to step into the unknown and just embrace it and run with it. And, you know, that would be the perfect candidate. Somebody who is ideally really, really excited about making drinks and working behind the bar.
So would the entry level be people who are not currently working bartenders?
They don't have to be current bartenders at all. You know, they can be anybody. I mean, I have applicants from the finance world. I have applicants from all kinds of, like, fashion, like people who are just didn't find themselves in their career so far and would like to attempt the restaurant career. So I teach bartending as not only drink making, but a bartending as a general position in the restaurant. So we teach a lot about other aspects of restaurant work. So it's all in there, you know, it's all in there. We take you and we put you through all the phases of how do you become a bartender. You start as an apprentice, as a barback, and you work your way up.
So, and how this happens in how many classes over how many hours?
Well, each tier is a 50-hour course, three times a week for a 4 weeks time. And there's a lot of homework, there's a lot of practical work, and the only benefit actually is not to kind of tout my own horn, but we're able to teach you with real ingredients. When you go to these instant bartending classes that cost you half as much as we charge, you'll be working with colored water.
That's it.
Yeah, which is identical to trying to learn how to cook with a rubber chicken. You know, it's missing the point.
All it is measuring things and pouring them into other things.
Right. So we are actually teaching you using real ingredients, real alcohol, real glassware, real tools. We're teaching you the whole methodology of how you create the neural network in your brain to memorize recipes proper way. How, you know, there's all kinds of things that will be helpful, but you cannot learn that if you don't taste along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the questions on the applications, I have to, you know, be very specific who I take into the course. It's not only if you can pay it, but, you know, we're asking for people who are not taking any kind of medication that could interfere with tasting of alcohol. You know, it's really important for us that the people are healthy, both mentally and physically. I'm interested in people who have a regular exercise program because, you know, I believe that bartenders should be fit, you know, and because their bodily fitness will influence the state of mind. So stuff like that, you know. I'm creating a new generation of bar warriors.
So when your bar warriors come out from the first level of the class, are they able to step behind a bar and make drinks and make them quickly?
They will be able to bar back in any bar anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them, the more gifted ones, will probably be able to be bartenders right away, you know. But it will still take them a long time to, you know, practice and to get their own experience, you know. So the level one is, you know, we can take blank people from the street, you know. The only requirement is ideally you want to be a professional bartender. Level two is for already established bartenders, people who work, you know, in the trenches night after night and who need some more guidance, some more techniques, who need new trends, who need to polish up their techniques, to polish up their knowledge, and this is what we then teach. We teach other aspects. We bring in the workshops on wisdom and how do you contain yourself behind the bar, how you don't lose force, how you don't identify with the situation, how you don't get emotionally involved, and stuff like that.
Do you also teach technique and speed in the secondary course?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is a workshop in the second course called the Fine Art of Banging Out Drinks Like a Maniac, because we preach that the first job of every bartender is to fill the register, and then the second duty is to fill the tip bucket. But it doesn't go, you know, one or the other. It has to be, you know, in that way. First the register and then the tip bucket, you know.
And you also have to realize that patrons don't want to stand around for a long period of time with no cocktail in their hand.
Of course.
That's not appealing to,
you know,
anybody.
Do you know one of the things that I've always enjoyed about our business, and we have a lot of friends who went into a lot of different fields. Mark and I have been friends since college, and, you know, I looked at a bunch of different things. My father was a fireman. And a truck driver, and my one sister's a judge, my other sister's an attorney, and my other sister's a social worker. And they're all great at their jobs, and they're all passionate about their jobs. And I looked at being an attorney, and I actually got accepted to Seton Hall Law School, and I at the last minute didn't take the seat. And one of the things I realized that I like about bartending is everybody's interests, if we do it right, everybody's interests are aligned in the bar. And I think this is why people have fascination with the restaurant and the bar business, as hard as it is. And it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
People come to you expecting you to make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
Looking to buy a drink, you don't try and convince someone to have another drink when they don't want a drink. You're just helping them select which one.
Yes.
If you make them a good drink, they're happy. They'll pay for it. You put the money in the cash register, your boss is happy. Mm-hmm. If you've gotten them their drink quickly and it's a good drink, they'll tip you, and that goes in the cash register. Your boss pays you some, mm-hmm. They pay you some. The customer's happy, the employee's happy, the bar owner's happy. Very few jobs are like that.
Yeah.
You know, you go to your lawyer sometimes to help you close the deal on your new house, but sometimes because you want to divorce your wife.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a social worker because you have a problem. My father is a fireman, was called because your house was on fire.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the great things about being a bartender is
Yes. Fill
the register, fill the tip cup, get the customers what they want. Yeah. Everybody's happy.
I say all the time, you go to your insurance agent, and he sells you something you don't want, but you really need.
Right.
Yeah.
You go to your bartender, he gives you something you don't really need, but you want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great analogy. You know, I couldn't agree more. It's a job that requires, the right person to be able to wear many hats
mm-hmm.
on moment-to-moment basis. And, you know, this is not something you can learn from a book. This is not something you can just figure out so easily. It will require, you know, a good mentor on your side that can guide you, through this whole process. And it's easier if you have somebody who went down that road. I mean, I was mentored by Dale DeGroff for years.
Yeah, so were we.
Yeah, and so that's what I learned from him. And, you know, the aspect, again, you know, I have to bring that up. I mean, the end result is being served by a master,
yeah.
A master server, who is so humble, appears so humble that you are just so pleased to be in this man's presence. And, you know, that's the objective. You know, that's the grown-up bartender, the person who can wear all these hats, you know, on moment-to-moment basis consciously, you know.
And don't take humble to mean not confident.
Right.
Because Dale, Dushan, Francis, me, we are all confident people.
We just pretend not to be. No, I'm kidding.
But the humility actually is an effect of an enormous amount of confidence that you know that you will handle any situation
right.
the way that it's supposed to be.
Right.
And that's where the humility comes in, because you are so fluid with everything.
All right, now we're running up against the clock here, Dushan, but just and the third tier of the class, what will that teach people?
Well, that's a class for advanced bartenders, and what I'm doing there is I'm creating more a round table than a class setting, where I bring out topics such as, you know, brand ambassadorship, such as new trends and how to develop them, such as, new techniques and how to develop them. And then I have people coming to that class to learn from each other
mm-hmm.
under my guidance, and so it's a really... It's really a fascinating course.
I think that's great. There is nobody doing that right now, and what a great opportunity. You know, as it is now, let's face it. A lot of the folks that we all know, when do we get together? We get together at these cocktail conferences. We get
yeah.
together, you know, a few times a year. Once in a while, one-on-one we'll see each other.
Yeah.
But to get a group of people in the room together who are really like-minded is too unusual.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, I always maintain the idea that people should always consider the prospect to learn from each other. You know, we can
mm-hmm.
only progress as a trade, and you know, and keep this lineage going if we enrich it and pass it on. And you know, I think a round table with people of experience and knowledge that can learn from each other is a move in the right direction.
Well, Dushan, real quick, do you have a website where people can go to find out about Bar Academy?
Yeah, it's called bar-solution.com.
barsolution.com. You can check that out. I'm going to work on learning how to pronounce it, and we're going to have that by the next time you
see us. Academia. Academia. Academia.
I'll work on it, okay? I can memorize drinks. That's a word I can't say. Jason Cosmos and Dusan Zarek's new book is Classic Cocktails Reimagined from New York's Employees Only Bar. It's got a large title called Speakeasy. You can find out about that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Dusan, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. You're awesome.
Thanks, Dusan.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. That guy is so smart.
Yeah, we were talking to Dusan a little bit off the air before the show, and we just having a chit-chat like we do sometimes. And Dusan was just saying, I am so pumped to be teaching people this craft. I am so pumped to be – it's been so much fun, this new era in my life of having this bar academia and being able to foster that in other people. And I think that what happens as you evolve in this business – and I think for lots of careers it happens as you evolve. You go from being the apprentice, you go from being the novice, you go from being the expert. Well, what happens after you're the expert? You want to teach other people. That's part of the natural progression of any craft or any profession is you go through those stages.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, you know what? I know a lot about this, and I want to teach other people about this, and that jazzes me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And a lot of what we do now is we used to be behind the bar every night. When we opened the restaurant, we worked six nights a week. Mm-hmm. Three nights I was the bartender, Mark was the maitre d', and three nights I was the maitre d' and Mark was the bartender. And now it's not that way anymore. I get behind the bar for a few hours now and then, and I enjoy it a great deal, and we work on the floor certainly as maitre d', but we have to teach. I mean,
it's one of the most fun things we do now. Okay?
It is.
I enjoy doing this radio show. We're still doing it 5.5 years after we started it.
Yep.
But I love to teach. I love to teach the cocktail classes we do in the restaurant. I love to teach
wine classes
when we're doing the wine classes. And I love to teach my staff. I love when somebody is receptive to that, when somebody really wants to know. There's nothing more fun than teaching somebody who really wants to know what you got.
And can I tell you a little bit of something I do every year? And,
tell the same jokes in your wine class?
I do that. No, and now I have the jokes on PowerPoint presentation. They sort of randomly turn up. No. Every year now, and I didn't realize I just did it, and you know this, but I wasn't the woman who teaches the wine class at Rutgers took my wine class a dozen years ago.
Oh, it's more than that.
15 years ago. And then she immediately asked me to come and guest lecture at the Rutgers wine class, which is a 4-credit course at Rutgers. On Cook, which is the agricultural school.
Which clearly did not exist when I was an undergrad.
Oh, man, I'd have taken that in a minute.
How ridiculously unfair is that?
So,
4-credit wine class.
But now we get to teach it. And I have so much fun because most intelligent wine people have their own particular take on wine. And I go in, and I go in with 8 samples, an ounce each of wine, and I blow in and I teach these 21-year-old Rutgers students and maybe a couple of 22- and 23-year-olds about wine. And Mark and I both graduated from Rutgers, and I see, myself, my nephew, my niece, my whoever in that class, and I think, well, maybe I can give you guys the bug, because Kevin Zarelli gave me the bug. Mm-hmm. I took a class with Kevin Zarelli, a light went off in my head, and I said, this is what I want to do. And if I can be that for somebody, wow, that's awesome. That's really tremendous.
Way better than taking an accounting class, sorry. I just sat in all those statistics classes and basically fell asleep, and I could have been taking a wine class. Really unfair.
Yeah. Well, now we can pass that on to other people. Hope you've enjoyed the hour being with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.